Hello and welcome back to the Solid Foundations podcast. I have my daughter co-hosting with me again. Great to have you back, Bear.
Good to be back.
And today we have a guest, a longtime friend of mine by the name of Jerry Howard. Welcome to the podcast, Jerry.
Hey, Gil. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. There's some personal excitement for me, one, because I've known you for years now, but I really don't know too much of your background and how you came up in detail of it. So I'm excited to hear that. You know, as I learn, our listeners are gonna be hearing it for the first time as well, just as I am. But what I'm excited for the listeners is when we start getting into law. I'm sure people just hearing the listeners hearing law, they're like, oh, I want to turn this off right now. And I really want for you to break it down. And, you know, with Bear and I and our simple questions that we'll have to really make it clear for them of why it's so helpful and needed. And I think they'll take a lot away from that. So I'm excited for that part of the podcast, too. And talking about what I do know from you, I got a list here that I just want to ramble off. And then we'll dive into you going back into your childhood growing up.
Sounds good.
And so right now, you're a named partner at Tyne, Taylor, Fox, and Howard.
That's correct.
Law firm on the east side of Santa Barbara.
That's right.
UCLA undergrad, Pepperdine law degree, Santa Barbara High School, Santa Barbara Junior High, Franklin. People know a Solid Foundations podcast brings on locals to talk to the locals. And so this isn't you coming from some fancy place where people can say, well, that's because he grew up there. No, you grew up on the east side of Santa Barbara.
That's true.
And so those are the things that I've learned from you about you over the years. But where my relationship with you all began was girls basketball, Blazers, coaching my daughter, Katrina Regalado, for many years. And to this day, she still keeps in contact with you.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm.
And a lot of my other players do as well. We had a lot of good players during that time in those years. Some of them went on to play collegiate basketball. Mm-hmm. A few have even dabbled into pro basketball, even across seas. So we had some pretty special kids, some pretty dynamite girls come through.
And I know that's one of your passions.
Love that.
One of your passions. So I know we'll be talking about that. Before we get there, take us, what was childhood like growing up on the east side of Santa Barbara?
Well, you know, originally, I'm not a native Santa Barbara. I wasn't born in Santa Barbara.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually from the south. I was born in Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, nah.
Mississippi, deep south is where my roots started.
Wifey and I just came back from Nolens.
He's in Nolens?
Uh-huh.
All right.
Louisiana, which I understood there were some people from Jackson, Mississippi and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Visiting as well.
Part of the Gulf of Mississippi, the Gulf Coast, is not that far from New Orleans. So I think Biloxi, it's probably about an hour and a half drive in.
Yeah, I've been to Biloxi.
Yeah. You've been to Biloxi?
Twice. All right. Yeah. Or an MMA camp, which... not for me, but I've been there. Not much to do out there, that's for sure. Very hot, though.
Oh, you went in the hot. You went in the summertime. Yeah. Hot and humid, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different looking bugs. Huh?
Yeah, just not my place.
It's yeah, the South is different.
Very much.
It's different, and so, you know, partially growing up there, and then coming to California. I mean. The contrast and differences in those places was unbelievable. I mean, I started school there in the mid to late 70s, you know, kindergarten and up to the third, fourth grade. And even at that time, we lived in a predominantly all-black community. And there was the black side of town and the white side of town. And a yellow school bus would come through our community and pick us up. We got bused to a different neighborhood school. So I experienced that as a kid in the mid to late 70s.
Because of the segregation?
In the South. Yeah. And so that was kind of what was known. That's the way things were at that time. had no idea about California, what that is or what was going on. And then my mom, well, I had family out here. We have family out here. My aunt was out here and had some cousins out here. My grandmother, some people have migrated from the South out to California, either in the late 50s or early 60s. So it just took some time to get my mom to come out this way.
Mm-hmm. And so you came out here, sixth grade was the first, fifth, sixth grade?
About fifth grade.
And what part of the East Side did you move to?
Came out here fifth grade. We landed. I was on the East Side. Initially, we were over on, I think that's Gutierrez Street, which would have been, now, you know, God, my East Side days are dropping off of me. But there was a Pennywise Market was on the corner right there, right behind the Franklin Center.
Yeah, so Elizabeth Street and Gutierrez.
Gutierrez was the next street over. So yeah, we were right over there for a while. And then we ended up moving over near Punta Gorda.
Nice.
And
was there a big culture shock?
Coming here
from Mississippi?
Heck yeah. Coming from the South, I only saw black and white. Had not really known anything about Mexicans, no Asians, not at that time in my period of growing up. And just the differences in the communities. Like, the South is pretty flat. There was no beautiful mountain backdrops like they have here. You have lakes and reservoirs, not an ocean. You know, that was the first time I ever seen a beach or went to the beach when we got out here. So a lot of differences in terms of culture and community.
Yeah.
That I just didn't experience.
And you went from being a part of the majority, if you're saying whites and blacks, then you come to SB where it's a majority of browns. How did that go fitting in?
Well, you know, when we got out here, and on the East Side at that time that I was there growing up, I mean, it was also a pretty sizable black population. We had a pretty good black community in the city and around the city at that time, along with, you know, Latinos. And then, you know, there were some white families that were over there as well. So it was more of a diversity community than I had ever experienced before.
Mm-hmm. But did you have cousins your age, brothers, sisters?
My, when my mom came out, it was with my, first let me back this up. My mom had 14 children. So let's start it there.
So you got some brother,
you got Southern family, right? And, yes. So she has 14 children. My mom has 11 sons and 3 daughters. And I am the penultimate child.
What's that mean?
The next to last. I'm number 13.
All right.
And then my baby sister, she's the 14th child. So my mom, when she moved here, she brought her last 4 children. So I have a brother and sister who are a couple years older than me, who are twins, and then myself, and then my little sister. And so we were the ones that kind of got moved out here and grew up in California. My other siblings are clearly older. Some of them had already had their own families and going in their direction in life. Mm-hmm. So coming out here, you know, it was the 4 of us with my mom. And yes, I have cousins that are here that were similar in age to us, a couple of years older, but not too far apart in age. So some family.
But you had some to go to school with and go to school. You didn't have to go so completely solo.
Didn't matter, man.
Yeah,
that's right. I was gonna go solo.
Yeah, did you always have that that confidence growing up?
Yes, I've always been kind of my own person. A little more focused, a little more driven, a little more determined than some of my peers and family members. almost to the point of cockiness.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you learn how to, as you get a little older, how to pull that back and be a better person. But I needed that. That's what prepared me to get to where I am today and be the person that I am today, because there was no roadmap for me to get to where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
There was no one in my family that had went to college or become a professional, or knew anything about school or what it takes to get to that and get to the next level. So I was in uncharted waters. And if you're going to be setting out on a path, doing something for the first time, you got to have some cockiness, some confidence, and some perseverance.
Was that, was it natural, like a natural gift, or did it happen being the second to youngest kid out of 14 kids? Was it your parents instilled it?
I think it's a combination of all of that. Certainly some natural gifts, certainly seeing my parents, although my parents were split up by the time I was five. So, but certainly seeing their conditions and their work ethics and the situations that they faced being in the South were an impetus for a lot of those things. My mother really valued education. She was not a highly educated woman herself. I think she may have gotten to the eighth grade. I don't think she completed that. She started having kids early. So education was something that she always valued and wanted her children to pursue.
Kind of like she knew she didn't do it, so she wanted it for her children. She wanted better for her children.
She wanted better for her children, like any good mother would want, yes.
And elementary school, was that a walk in the park? Was it sunshines and rainbows, or was it a jungle over there?
We are talking about the East Side at that time. School for me was not an issue, luckily. That's where I think where you talked about maybe having a gift. I was reading and writing before I even went to kindergarten. I think some of that had to do with my older siblings when they would go to school and then they'd come home and I'm interested in what they were doing. So I knew how to write. I knew how to count. I knew my numbers, you know, the basic things mm-hmm. that they started you with by the time I even touched down in kindergarten. And then that was able to grow and kind of expand. So I never had a lot of difficulty in schools along the way, which was kind of my blessing. As I said, I don't mm-hmm. come from a background with highly educated people. So,
yeah, so you had it good on the actual grades part and personal, making friends.
Well, you know, yeah, you know, I was an athlete, and when you're an athlete, you can make friends pretty easily, becoming around teammates and opponents, people that you play against. You start to build relationships and friendships, and, you know, some of those last for a long time. I mean, I still got very close friendships with guys I played basketball with at Santa Barbara High or football with
mm-hmm.
back in the day, and we still have connections and communications and stay in touch. So you being in that environment, I think it helps, definitely helps, as opposed to if I was not an athlete, could it have been maybe a little difficult or a little mm-hmm. more challenging to develop relationships? Probably. I was always pretty charismatic and could get along well with people. So that making friends.
Yeah, that and confidence goes a long way. were you a dual sport player then? Basketball, football?
Multi-sport player growing up. You know, as a kid, did everything. You know, went to the Boys and Girls Club, the East Side Club. So over there, you know, they had you involved in everything. Or you could pick and choose. But I played soccer. I played baseball. Definitely football, definitely basketball. Did a little bit of track and field. Football and basketball was clearly the first loves.
And Santa Barbara High, You played for the Dons?
Yes.
Over there? What positions in football did you play?
Football, I was a strong safety.
And strong safety, nine. Yeah. So you got to hang back and make sure you were the last, if they got past you, that was it?
Well, I that would be more the safety. Uh-huh. I would be more like if in today's football, kind of like an outside linebacker, roaming linebacker. Where you could drop in coverage, but then also feel on the run, just kind of and put you in different positions around the field. Sometimes there would be, depending on the play call, where there would be a time where I would be the deepest opponent if the other safety got moved up and had a different call to address.
And basketball? What position?
Basketball is a point guard, man. We had a fabulous team back then. Probably one of the better teams to come through Santa Barbara. I know there's been some pretty good teams well after me, but we had a super talented team at the time.
And were you on the taller side back then as well? You're pretty tall now, and so a tall point
guard. We had a tall team, man. Yeah. I mean, we had guys that were 6'9", 6'8", 6'6", and just completely loaded. I mean, talent all the way, and we had a deep bench. I know people used to come early to our games because we would be doing dunks and warm up and turn it into a dunk contest.
Putting on a show?
Yeah. And believe it or not, it was something that happened during that time. CIF banned dunking in warm ups.
Because of that?
Because of that. And, you know, I'm sure we weren't the only school that were doing it. About that time, we would have been in 4A, which is equivalent to 1A now, or open division. But, yeah, we would we would turn it into a little dunk contest. When people first started to get their dunks in, you realize you had a little jumps in you. And so and our team was well-known in the community. Almost similar to some of those girls' teams that we put out there mm-hmm. from our program, and so yeah, people would come early to watch that, and then CIF banned it. And so if you did a dunk in the warm ups, you would get a technical foul, and the other team would get free throws
even before the game started.
Before the game started. So let me just put it this way: we started a lot of games 1-0 where the other team wouldn't get a shot.
You're like, the hell with it. We're doing it.
We're going to do it.
And so you had a, seems like, yeah, it was a good time.
Good time.
Going through school. Was there any at some point where you did either have to, you know, put somebody in their place or maybe stand up for a friend where things got physical growing up?
I mean, yes. It was the East Side. I got challenged. I had to respond to challenges. And like any youth, I had my share of trouble. I didn't have some really sugar-coated path to get into where I'm at. No, I made a lot of mistakes. I got in a lot of trouble. I had groups of friends that I ran with. And some of those guys had, you know, they took a different path than me ultimately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had to pay the price for the path they chose. But they know if I see them or we come in contact with each other, you know, I still acknowledge them as my friend because these are guys that I knew and grew up with. Over time, I started to move in a different direction and started to move with different friends, especially when I was playing ball because that was important to me and I didn't want to have that taken from me. And I had to start making some decisions about which direction I was going to go. And also, like, you got a little assistance for some of the guys. Like, they'll say, Jerry, man, you don't need to be over here. Mm-hmm. This ain't for you no more.
Yeah, those are good friends. When good friends see something in you, they let you know.
They let you know.
I'm just curious on why we even started hanging out with those guys when you had football and basketball.
Well, this goes back to, as I said, from even grade school. These are guys that you meet in school and they live in your neighborhood. Interestingly enough, and that's a good question that you just brought up. When I think back upon it, growing up over there, the majority of my friends and this little crew that we ran with, which was primarily a bunch of Black and Mexican kids. We all were single family, single parent household. We all just had moms. None of our dads were in the picture. As even as I reflect and think about it now, I probably have just a few friends whose parents were either still married or they had a relationship with both parents. But a lot of these guys we grew up with, we were in these little apartments on the east side and we just had our moms. So not a lot of guidance there in terms of positive things or life planning activities like where we want to go. So we start out, we see what the older guys are doing in the communities, and we're that little rat patch kind of developing our own attitude and who we are in the neighborhood.
Was it fun for you?
Yeah.
In a way?
There's a lot of stories that, and a lot of things that we did back in those days were absolutely fun. A lot of it was troublesome and things that we got in trouble with. But at the time, and being young, and it's what we did.
It wasn't until they're like, all right, I'm taking basketball and football, until you're like, okay, this is serious.
Yeah, you know, especially in high school, when they started saying that you have to have eligibility requirements, so you had to have a certain GPA, or you got pulled off the team, or you weren't allowed to play in games. When that stuff really started mattering to me, people were like, man, I like playing ball. And so the challenge of school wasn't different for me, so I could produce in the classroom and made sure that I was eligible to participate in sports. Hindsight, I look at my academic performance and go, it was mediocre, because I just did enough to play ball and run around my friends. But as I learned later in college and then going to law school, you know, I could have really excelled academically if I made that a primary focus and applied myself, because I had the capabilities to do it.
Was there like a certain like event when you're like, all right, I need to distant myself from those type of guys and focus, or was it just like overall?
It was a couple of things starting to happen. And then, you know, some of my friends would get picked up and, you know, get put in juvie for a while. Some of the activities started getting a little more serious, with people getting hurt and weapons being used and things like that. And then, you know, my mom preaching to me, you know, you need to stop this and change it up. And then even my older brother was like, man, I got to get you away from this. And then when you start to see your friends disappear for several months or a couple years, and then, you know, by the time you come back, you're 15 or 16, and you ain't seen each other in a while. So as we called it back in the day, going on those vacations. And yes, so I started having to make some decisions about what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go. Another thing that with a person like me is highly, super competitive. Gil probably picked up on that. My players probably picked up on that. But I was competitive at everything. Like some people were competitive at certain things. If, you know, we're playing a game of 21, a basketball on the court, yes, I'm going to try to beat you there. But if you told me that I couldn't get an A in a class, then my attention went in that direction. And so it was those types of things. I actually got a challenge one time in an English class by some guys and, you know, who pretty much said that, you know, you can't score high in this class. And that became my focus, and I outscored them, and then I let them know about it. So
that kind of bleed into your friend group, and that, I would say?
It did. As I start to transition from my friends, you know, I did start becoming closer to friends, to guys that were like me. In fact, I have two really close friends to this day. We're all similar, all went to college, all professionals now, and have done really well for ourselves and our families. And they both live in different parts. Well, one still lives in California, another one lives out of state. But, you know, having a bond and building a relationship with people that are like-minded, with people that challenge you and elevate you, is important, because they help lift you. They helped motivate you. And when you see them making accomplishments, it tells you that you need to step up your game.
Mm-hmm. It is very beautiful. So when talking about the event, how did you get into like the law? Was it seeing your friends go on those vacations and you're like, all right, I want to dabble in that?
You know, one of the guys I was just saying, of my two best friends, he said he remember me saying I wanted to be a lawyer when we were young. I remember thinking that. I don't remember verbally expressing it to anyone else. So it was always something in the back of my mind from a young age. I think where really, now when I think about it, where it really spearheaded from was being a kid in Mississippi, and I saw some of the hardship that my mom went through with some of my older brothers who were being arrested or detained or having police officers. I witnessed police officers coming to our house and pulling my brothers out in handcuffs and throwing them in cars. And then you have this, you know, young black mother trying to go to court or go to jail or trying to figure out how to protect her sons. And I'm not sure she always got the best advice or got the best representation for them. And just seeing the difficulties that she had in trying to do that and not being a very educated woman. So I think it that at least planted the seed and got it going. But then again, as I said, I didn't have any direction. I didn't have anyone to say, hey, if you want to be an attorney, here's what you got to do. So even though I contemplated and thought about it, yeah, I had doubt because I didn't know if I could do it. I thought you had to be super smart to get into these schools and you know, have, you know, schools cost money. Right? We didn't have that, not even close. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I had some doubts about whether or not I could do it and whether or not it would be for me.
So I got a couple questions on that, because for my parents, me, my kids, there was no college. There was no thought of going to college. I mean, even myself, I was expelled from Santa Barbara High as early in my sophomore year, beginning of sophomore year. Ended up going to a continuation school. Got moved around a lot. Ended up at a continuation school called El Puente, and then was able to graduate there by the age of 16. And by then, I was like, I'm done with school. I don't want to go to school anymore. When was your decision to want to go to college and go that route? And if it wasn't being spoken to you, how did you go about learning how to do it?
Well, I had a situation where I got a little trouble in school, and it could have been one that really got me thrown out of school. The principal, deans, my mom, people were talking. I had a good enough rapport and was likable enough that these people wanted to help. They also saw the potential, and they knew that, like, Jerry's not a dumb kid. We just don't know why he's not applying himself. And so, this dean really kind of ripped into me and just said, you know, you're just going to be like all these other guys over here. And it's kind of a sad situation, because there was an abundance of talented people that I saw before me around my time and that came after me in this community and certainly on the East Side, that for whatever reasons, and there's many and everybody have their own, but you know, they didn't live up to their potential or they couldn't find out how to get there. And he said point blank that, you know, you're just going to be just like all the others. And I told you I was competitive and I told you don't challenge me. And I looked at him and I said, you don't have the clue of what you're talking about. You don't know me. And I'm not going to be. And he goes, yes, you are. Look at you. You're falling right there. And I remember leaving that meeting with all of them. Then my mom still kind of in my ear where I said, you know, I'm going to show them all. They have no idea about who I am and what I'm capable of. I started applying myself in school as well as in sports and made sure that I was going to show them that I'm not your statistics.
That's beautiful to hear. And I want to go back. Was that the principal you said?
It was a dean.
The dean. Do you think for the kids that you said that you saw potential, was it the lack of drive that they had in themselves or the lack of people around them to like to support them and motivate them?
I think it's a combination of that. Some people lead a little more in terms of guidance and structure than others to kind of find their way and get on track. And as I told you, there wasn't a lot of that around for us at the time. Let me modify that. I think if it's what you wanted, you could have found the right person to be a mentor and guide you. But you would have to take that initiation and the steps to do that. And some young men just aren't thinking that way at that time. So I do believe if there was more of a structure, more guidance, more people pouring into them, that some of those guys could have had a better path. I had more self-discipline than them. I certainly had more determination than them. And it only took a small spark, like this dean saying something to me that I completely disagreed with, for me to show that I'm going to prove you wrong.
I had a little bit of a similar path when I got expelled from the high school. They had given me multiple chances, but at this point in time, I was just like, I don't care about anything. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do now, and I'm just, doesn't matter what anybody says. And the thing about that was I went from an honor roll student in junior high, me going from playing sports, baseball, basketball, football, and me wanting to quit all those as well now. And then school, like, forget about school. And so what I found for me was, since especially because I wasn't very sociable and didn't have the confidence, I looked around for a group that I could hang out with that, you know, that didn't have drive, that didn't have goals. And it was easy to find them, you know, and that's who I started surrounding myself with. And so that, when you talk about like lost potential and you talk about people having drive and lack of resources really for people to pour into them. Yeah, there were so many kids that were talented, you know, whether they were artists, whether they were good fighters, you know, especially now you got the UFC, you want to fight, let's put that to good use.
Yep.
But or sports, some kids were great at sports, but they didn't have the parents to buy them the cleats or, you know, or even just sign them up. And so that was me seeing so many friends that, you know, I'm 40 now and at probably starting in my 20s, I started seeing friends overdose, go to prison for life,
mm-hmm.
go in and out of prison. That's their life, is going in and out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And just so much potential lost. And that was a big reason why, you know, we started Solid Foundations, is because we wanted to be able to introduce kids. Because one of the things is I lost interest in the things that I grew up doing, but I didn't know what else to do. Like, I didn't know of any other interest to follow. And so we like to introduce them to those things. But then once we hook them with, whether it's martial arts, using tools and building, or fitness, now we bring them into a circle, you know, so they have a circle now, and they have of all healthy people trying to push each other and be better with each other. And, you know, when we get help from the community financially to then turn around and invest in them. So if they do want to do, because, you know, you ran the Blazers, you know what club cost,
right,
to go travel and play and enter tournaments. So, you know, we're passionate about that, and just you touching base on that just brought that to mind. Is like, there's so many kids with potential out there. They just need that help and resources.
I mean, you spoke on something that's relevant. I believe in education. I'm obviously very highly educated. I know education can definitely create a good path for someone. But in my lifetime and in my experience, I've learned, you know, the formal education route isn't for everyone. And it doesn't mean that that person who doesn't perform well in the classroom doesn't get these so-called grades that everybody looks up to and determine whether or not you're intelligent. Doesn't mean that that person isn't gifted or isn't talented. They just see it and do it in a different way. So, as you said, there's artists, there's people that are good with mechanics, there's people that work on computers and develop programs and stuff. There's so many different things that people are talented in. Our school systems, unfortunately, don't always target those things or have them available. And it's good that you have programs like Solid. I remember one of the first times I saw you and you were talking about building Solid. And you were saying, I'm going to show them other skills. And you talked about using their hands and building things and developing things was one of the things you were working in addition to health and learning how to eat better and taking care of your bodies at a young age. I think those are important qualities and things that we should be promoting out there to these kids and giving them life. You know, you have a passion about drawing. There's something you can do with that. If you have really good skills in doing auto detailing work or fixing up cars, that's a good skill. You know, it shouldn't be looked upon or dropped down because you're not some executive sitting in an office somewhere. And if we can help them learn about those things that they like early, and help them develop and go in directions that they can do something really positive and productive for themselves and their community. I think that's a powerful thing. And you having Solid and getting that started is what this community needs.
No, it is a beautiful thing. Would touch base on like people going to school. When I went to school, I hated school. Like, I don't like being in the classroom. I just didn't like it. But I also knew that I love to grow. I like to learn things, but just sitting in the classroom, and I used to just get so upset with myself because I wasn't understanding the things that they were teaching. And it wasn't until my dad really explained, we touched base on my last podcast about just trying to learn how you learn and really accepting who you are. Because like when I was told like you would be on the podcast, that was beautiful. I get to learn new things about someone that I don't know and that's experienced life and that had their journey, and I get excited for that, and I want to learn, and I want, like, I'm interested, like, I was nervous to come here, but when it was school, I was just like, oh, gotta go sit in, like, a classroom for an hour, and it was just not fun, like, I hated it, so, like, when you explain those things, when you two explain those things, it's kind of like, yeah, it gives me, like, peace, like, all right, I'm not actually just dumb, and I just didn't learn. It's just they weren't teaching me how I needed to be taught.
And there's some basic foundation in schooling that still is necessary. Learning how to read, learning how to write, learning the basics of mathematics. You know, those things are still important. But having some programs that also allow children to find their interests and then can harness those and develop them. I know there's been a struggle to keep PE in school and keep the musics and the arts in schools for whatever reason. But the ability to either keep those going or to be able to tap into an organization like yours that could assist the school with the kids for those other aspects of learning is important. And we got to figure out how to get better at that. We should not be, we're at this time period in where we are in the world and what we have, the resources we have available to us, you know, there shouldn't be kids getting left behind anymore.
Absolutely. And it's still happening. And it, when I talk to people about like our monthly donation program at Solid, it's called the Brick Program, where companies or individuals can on a monthly basis donate. And I tell them, it's kind of like I see it as an investment firm, right? You got the kids that are getting good grades, that are great at school. They got mountains of people wanting to pour into them, which they should. They're earning it. They're putting in the work. But then there's those, you know, those are like the blue chip stocks, like the Microsoft, the Apple and all that. Of course, it's a safe bet to put your money.
Right.
But like you and I were touching base earlier, how many kids are undervalued stocks? And if you pour into them, if you invest into them, you get a mountainous of a return that right. you might not have got at all because of that. And so that that is something that I'm passionate about, you know, as well. It's just I can't tell what this 5-year old who just came in and to Solid, but he's a great kid. I'm just going to pour into him. If he just does his part, becomes a good father, and right. teaches somebody something that he learned, man, my job, my mission's complete.
Right.
You know, if he grows up and happens to be a pillar of the community, boom, that's a bonus. But it's just pouring in to kids when you don't think you, even if they're not doing good, that those kids still need us, you know, in the community. And I do want to give Santa Barbara School District the credit. They have partnered up with Solid recently in the last couple of years, and they've allowed us to come in and teach wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and a work ethic, you know, mm-hmm. letting kids actually drill holes and put things together with some guidance. And when they said about being okay with us bringing in martial arts, I told them, well, this isn't no theory martial arts. You know, I can't just say, kids, if this were to happen, this is how you move. I said, I need the kids to be able to put it. Right. So they're going to have to take each other down. They're going to have to be able to submit each other and learn how to tap and all the lessons that come with it. And they were open to it. You know, they were open to it. Not every school has had us in there, but quite a bit of them do. And so just like you were touching base on.
Well, you know, any real true martial artist and any true person who trains or teaches it, it has nothing to do with fighting mm-hmm. or going out to initiate a fight or do any of that. In my own training in martial arts, I was told that if you come here for that reason, you're here for the wrong reason. Then I knew I found the right person. So there's a beauty to it. There's an art to it. It teaches discipline. It has aspects of meditation. I also liked it because as I gotten older and I can't participate in basketball the way I used to or some of those other rigorous sports, it gave me the physical challenge that I need, but also the mental challenge, and kept my body in a condition that allows me to be at my best. I have anyone that's in the practice of law would tell you it's demanding, it's rigorous, it's challenging. There's incredible deadlines and timelines that you have to respond to. It's also sedentary. You know, there could be a lot of sitting with it. So, you know, I use my athletic training and my martial arts training for keeping me grounded, keeping my mind right, keeping me in good health. All those things that I started as a young person and then use and continue it. I've always trained to try to keep myself physically, mentally strong and at my best. And I just didn't let that go because I couldn't do football or basketball anymore. It just segued into other things. So that's good to hear that the school is at least starting to be open to that. I know I'm here and I'm supposed to be the speaker and the guys you're questioning, but I do have to say this. I remember when you first started Solid and what you at least you gave me the early basis for it and understanding for it. But what I'm impressed with, you were true to this. It's your passion. It's your drive. I saw you having businesses and working your businesses, and then you started to direct away from that, even turning that into other people because it became about Solid. And that is what's going to develop this program and the people that come through it, because it starts with someone having passion about it, and that passion is obvious, it's palpable. And when people see that, they'll gravitate to it. Similar to when I started the girls' basketball program, I was actually told that when I was about to start the program, that the program would not do well, it wouldn't succeed. I was actually told by other coaches, your program will be done in 2 years, maybe a year. And I said, why? They go, there aren't any kids around here that care about playing basketball. There aren't any kids here that are good enough for this. And I told these people, I said, I think you guys are wrong. Like you said, seeing that kid that comes in who could end up really being something special if given just enough attention and explained it to him. And so when I started the program, I didn't have a lot of players. We weren't ready to go play tournaments or do anything like that. But we were going to teach them and develop them. And I showed them that this is important to me. I showed them that they were important to me. And the benefits we reap from that were immeasurable. I mean, my program grew astronomically. And people were trying to get to us and find us. And, hey, who's this? And what's going on? And so, but it was because I showed them that I cared. And the coaches and the players and the parents around, we showed that we cared. We called it the Blazer family because we were like family. And when you provide that and show that to a child out there who's looking for it, it could have a remarkable effect on what happens in their life.
No.
So good job on Solid, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Yes, a very good job. And I'm very proud of my father. And I even hate to say this because you're talking about you had other coaches bringing you down, and I, oh my God, it has a little lump in my throat. But I did look at my father, but when he first started Solid, I was like, you're going to leave your job that it's making you money and go start this thing that you don't even know if it's going to work, and you're not even making money. And I don't know if it comes from me just being naive and just selfish, but yeah, I just remember saying that and going on the years and me starting to help and growing, obviously, as a person. I definitely saw how Solid could help and has helped not only the kids in the community, but just me personally. It did open my eyes to, like, if you want to do something, all you need is to just go and do it. Yep. And put in the time and work and the dedication, and it's going to work out for you. And again, Father, I hate to say that, but I am sorry for doubting you at first, and I am glad that it didn't do nothing.
You know, those words you just said, I mean, this is a podcast. I'm hoping you guys have the ability to save that stuff or capture it and replay it, especially coming from a young lady like yourself. I mean, that's powerful. And this generation of kids, you probably know more about than I do. And connect with. But if they can hear what you just said, a lot of what really drives success and helps make someone successful is determination, belief, and drive. That's really what it comes down to. There's going to be a lot of other things you got to figure out. There will be definitely hardships. But if the purpose is right and your belief in the purpose, it will overcome all of that. I don't care how many down days you have or how rough it gets. That purpose brings you back every day. And that's what people start to see. And then that's what people start to tap into. And then they'll say, I'm going to go behind that. And so, that, you know, if they capture anything from this, not so much about me or who I am, but it's what we just both said. Because everybody can have that. Everybody has that within them. But their ability to harness it and focus it is what we need to figure out for each one of them.
Well, thank you both very much. Bear, a lot of that, what Jerry had said, purpose, belief, and drive. I agree 100%. I would add a fourth to that, and mine was gratitude. I had so much gratitude for the people that invested in me when I gave them no reason to. I gave them the opposite of why would you trust this kid who keeps getting arrested, who keeps getting in trouble, who wants to be a gangbanger, who wants to sell drugs and stuff like that. And so I got to a point where I was so uncomfortable. Like, yeah, I grew a business. I learned it. It was helped me support and raise a family. But there's a point in me where there was no way that I could not start something else. And I didn't even know what it was. I just knew I had to give back. I had to pay forward to what my parents did for me, what people in the community did for me. And it was so, it got to a point where I didn't listen right away. I kept trying to do it. Well, I'll do it this way through my business or add something, you know, and that's why I started hiring a bunch of kids and a bunch of teenagers. And that didn't work out. And like I always tell you, everything happens for a reason. I was supposed to go and do something new. And, you know, was it, I lost, you know, that when I get afraid of something, it doesn't look like fear because I go into it. But that doesn't mean that there's not fear.
Right.
And so when this idea came up, I was at a point too in my life where I started believing in faith and having faith, not religion, but just having faith. And to a point where it's like, okay, I could see what I could do as a man. And it seems like it hit the ceiling. And I need to do something past that. And the only way it was handing it over to God and saying, you know what? I need your help. I need your help. I can't do this on my own. I don't know what to do, but I am going to do it. And I trust you. I hand it over to you. Just use me as you like. And I'm going to go do it. And it's so important for me, for you and your brothers and sisters to see is that your dad followed a passion. He didn't follow the money. He let money go to the side and said, I'm going to go do this with absolutely no starting money. It happened to be, I happened to put in 20 years of working. So I had a little unemployment that I never had tapped into because I was busy working and running businesses. So I'll go off that. And if it's meant to be, it'll meant to be. And you could tell it's been meant to be. We're going 5 years now. And so that was important for me, for you guys to see that I followed passion and had faith, because I never want you guys to be tied down to a job that you hate because of the money. You know, there are certain circumstances where you need to tough it out for a little bit, but in the end, it should be going. You should be directed to a passion that you want to follow.
It definitely has done that anytime. I just think I'm not stressful. Just going into jobs and making different mistakes and just like, I have a little more empathy to myself because I just know that I am young and this is what life is. It's about the journey and the process. So just the fact seeing you do all that stuff, it just gives me ease during just life and just regular little challenges that everyone goes through.
And let me put this on the record for people that hear this and they're thinking about doing something and they don't know how to start it, or they have a passion for something but they're not sure what they're supposed to do, or they actually started doing some things and it hasn't gone the way that they wanted. or there's been some setbacks, or there's been some mistakes, or that word failure. When I was coaching, and my players would make mistakes, and they're gonna make mistakes. I would tell them all the time, you're gonna make mistakes. That's why we're here. We're not perfect. But I said, it's not the mistake I'm concerned with. I'm concerned with what you do afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. The failures are mistakes. There's no successful person that has not had their share of failures and mistakes. But what they did afterwards was key. What am I talking about? What did they learn from it? What? How did they examine that? How did they look at it? And I'll tell you for one thing, they got back up. You're going to have the failure. You're not going to have success in anything without the failures and the mistakes and sometimes the self-doubt. But you got to get back up. And you got to go back at it. And you got to learn from those failures and mistakes. You don't want to keep repeating them. So if you're starting something and it hasn't gone the way you want it to go, or you made some mistakes, and now all the naysayers are getting in your ear, see, I told you you couldn't do that, or you know what made you think you could do that? You're not smart enough. You're not like other people. You cannot listen to that stuff. What you got to do is listen to that little voice inside you that's telling you you should do this. They may not understand your purpose or reason for it, and it's not for them to understand sometimes. They'll get it later. But you got to have enough faith in yourself to say, I'll get back at it.
Yes, I agree with that. And I've always just wondered, because, you know, there's a point where it's like, it's not going your way and you keep on trying. Is there something that tells you, okay, stop being naive and maybe try something new? Or is it just a feeling you guys have? Or when do you know when to stop? Like,
It's one of those things you get better with at time, like anything else. You know, when you first tried to tie your shoe, you was not good at it. The 10th time, you were a little better. The 100th time, you could do it with your eyes closed. That happens in anything that you're doing. There's going to be some bumpy roads at the start. There'll be some things that you need to figure out. They'll come up again. Then you'll, I saw this before. I'll have a better way of going about it. But it's those little stumbling blocks, a little learning lesson that you build on that goes to the, give you success. Sometimes you have to take a step back and look at it for a sec. Analyze it. Pause. Get refreshed. And then go back at it. So there's no, like, per se, guiding book to say, hey, when you experience this, here's what you do. But you do want to look at it and say, what was my mistake here? What was my misstep? You know, someone did tell me about this, but I didn't stop to listen. Look at those things and then pick yourself back up at and go at it again.
So, Jerry, we have so much more to talk about, and we haven't even scratched the surface of the law part. So yes, we're going to have to bring you back, and I hope you're open to coming back. Yeah.
Okay.
Before we do cut, I want to give some of something to the listeners that they can know off the top of their head that, hey, this is something that might happen and I can protect myself knowing a little bit of the law, or I could reach out to Jerry and get some more info on it. And that to me is, if somebody that one of my peers, with a few, besides a few exceptions, who have bought and owned their own home, typically will get a home passed down to them because their family came here early in Santa Barbara and were able to buy, and now that house has been in the family. And unfortunately, when that person passes on and they doing what of course they want to do is pass that home down to their children, but that's not necessarily the best way. Can you kind of educate us on what the best way to protect yourself in an inheritance of a home from a family member?
Well, you know, it's a very general question, and it's pretty broad, because there's different situations for everyone, and it's the factual specific situation that they're facing that we got to look at and analyze. But there are ways of passing on property from a generation to another generation, from a parent to a child, a grandparent to grandchild. where you can able to pass those properties down. And when you're passing properties down, there could be taxes that you have to deal with, certainly property taxes, but there's sometimes some rules and exceptions in the law that will allow that property to pass, and you don't have to deal with those tax situations. Also, when property is being passed down, and then let's say someone received the property, but then they want to sell it, well, then now you got to think about this thing called capital gain taxes and what impact that would have on your ability to do something with the property. In addition, when properties are being passed down, sometimes you might have a single property that's being passed to multiple people. So they eventually become co-owners of the properties. And when you have 2, 3, 4, 5 co-owners on the property, you know, sometimes things arise with that in terms of what they're going to do with the property, how they're going to own it, how they're going to manage it. And so there's a lot of different legal issues that can come up in those situations. And yeah, that's what we do. That's my firm. That's what I do a lot of, and trying to guide them in terms of receiving that inheritance and how to continue it going forward. And also, how do you do proper planning for that? You know, in terms of, you know, do I create a trust? Do I create a will? What type of estate planning documents do I need to prepare to protect these hard-earned properties and assets that I built up and passed them on? And you're right. I got to come back and do this because one of my passions is to help families, especially minority families, who have worked hard and have earned some things, figure out how we do this. How do I do this? Oftentimes, I think people look at estate planning or these types of planning or financial planning as only something for wealthy people, and that's not true. There's aspects of planning that applies to everyone, and then certainly in planning in a way that you don't want your property tied up in probate or other aspects that makes it rather difficult for everybody to deal with that property in the aftermath. So
absolutely, and that's how us minorities do think. We wait till it happens, and then we're like, now we'll go get you after we're stuck in all this stuff, you know? And it's the vice versa too. You know, when I started companies, because I got a little bit of knowledge, I went and started corporations and getting incorporated, and that come to bite me in the butt because I didn't do it right and I didn't set it up. So I didn't set it up correctly, and there's cost to it when I didn't need it. So yes, please come back. And I think this one's going to set a great episode for so people who can know who they're talking to. And so next time when you're talking law, they're not just thinking it's this guy coming in here and, yeah. and you know, and they're going to listen. So appreciate you coming on. Bear, any closing thoughts?
No, I'm sorry to take you away from the law, but I do appreciate the words and wisdom you just gave me. And I hope I learn more from you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I know you did say you had some law questions and some other things we want to get into, but I think what happened here was intended to happen, in setting this foundation about, you know, giving some people hope and about their dreams out there and learning that, you know, who you are, just whatever your situation is, you can make something out of that. I'm not a person that came from wealth, as you just learned. Or high education, or any of those things. But I had belief in myself, I bet on myself, and I went after it. And it happened. And I can tell you, along the way, yes, there was a lot of turmoil, there was a lot of pitfalls, there was a lot of things I had to overcome. You know, they didn't just walk me into UCLA and give me that degree. Mm-hmm. And my law school experience was even more different. And so you know, I don't know, Barry, you probably went to Brown, but he know a little bit about this. I could spend time talking to you about my law school experience because I was in law school while the whole Jay Simpson trial was going on. So that's another topic for another day. But I know we got segue off and we didn't touch on a lot of topics, and I'll come back to do those things and certainly address more of the legal stuff. But I think this was important that we started to give people a sense of what they're capable of if they just bank on themselves.
Absolutely. Next time when we bring you on, we're going to get into your UCLA and your Pepperdine experiences. We barely touched on the Blazers, and I want to go deeper on that.
You want to go deep in the Blazers?
I want to go deep on the Blazers. And then something in the intro that I completely left off the list, and then you didn't remind me in the beginning, but you served as a board member of the Eastside Boys Club, the same boys club you went to as a kid. So, and you touched a little bit on the martial arts, but you want to talk about martial arts, we could do that all day as well. So we got a lot more to talk about, and we will do it. We'll have you back on. But until then, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.